How are we doing, folks? Well, I'm glad you're here. Next week, particularly next weekend, Saturday, 4:45 p.m., marks a fateful moment in the history of our community because we will start our fourth service in Park City, Utah. And we're thrilled about that. Yeah, most of you have heard us. We've been heard us talk about this. We've been talking about it for quite some time. Frankly, we've been thinking and praying about it for many, many years. And I can't believe it's actually happening. It's just a thrill. And we'd love for you to help us get the word out. We have these cards available at the back. They'll be available at the doors, at Guest Central, in the foyer. Please take some of these with you. If you have a friend or a colleague or someone you think might like to join us for our Capitol service in Park City, we'd love for you to give them a personal invitation. Also this week, you'll see us post some things on social media. Help us get the word out by liking it or sharing it or whatever you do with things on social media. Please help us get the word out because who knows, maybe a friend of your friend we'll find out about this, and this is an opportunity for us to share with them the love of Jesus and what it's like to learn from Jesus how to do life. So please get the word out with us. Thank you, thank you, thank you for that. This morning we continue our series looking at Psalm 23. We're working verse by verse through this series, and today we'll look at verse 2. I've invited my friend Rob Harder to share. Honestly, Rob doesn't even need an introduction at this point. Rob's spoken so many times to our community. He's a part of our community. Rob is the director of a great organization called the Christian Center, which happens to be located in Park City. And Rob and his team do incredible work meeting the needs of lots and lots of people through the region. We're thankful that we get to partner with him, and I'm thankful I get to call him friend. Today, Rob's going to bring us an important message. Friends, most of us desperately need to hear what the Lord is speaking through our friend Rob today. So why don't we take a few moments, quiet our hearts, and ask God to speak. Lord, in this moment, no matter where we are in the spiritual journey, open our eyes to see the wisdom of this important word. May we apply it to our lives. And may we do so this week. May it change the way we live. In the name of King Jesus. Amen.
Thank you, Troy. Good morning, Capitol. How are you? Good. You guys had plenty of time to get here on time, right? Extra hour and everything. So good to have people all the way in the back. I love it. And you can wave to me in the way back. Yeah, you can hear. Okay, good. Awesome. Like, I think we need to expand. Troy, just go outside. Even in the winter, it's fine. Just get some heat lamps out there. We're going to keep growing. It's fine. By the way, I am living in Park City. I am so excited that we're going to have a branch in Park City. It's not just for me and my family, although I thought it was for a while. No, it really isn't. It's for everybody in Park City. We're so excited about that. In fact, last Saturday, my wife and I were leading a marriage seminar for couples in Park City. And the whole topic was about how we are, as a culture, struggling more and more and more, connecting as couples, connecting in relationships because of all the wonderful devices that we have, like these things. It's hard, isn't it, to focus on communication, to listen to each other. And particularly when it comes to marriage, we have all these distractions. So we're talking about how do we stay connected in our marriage with all these wonderful technological devices. In fact, we kind of mentioned a couple of things I'll share with you. We are the tethered generation now. In fact, this upcoming generation, I guess to be technical, is the tethered generation. We're always tethered to our devices all the time. Just quick question, how long do you go without your cell phone with you? It's a little scary. I mean, how many people go to sleep with your cell phone next to your pillow? Don't answer that one. But I think too many of us do. We fall asleep looking at Facebook. It's right there. And I hope you don't like something you're not supposed to like, you know, when you're sleeping. And anyway, don't do that. Bad idea. Linda Stone, a technology thought leader, is studying the recent phenomenon she calls continuous partial attention, or CPA. It has nothing to do with accounting All right. It's about technology and the distractions. She argues that CPA is different than just multitasking in this way. When we multitask, we are motivated by a desire to be more productive and more efficient. In the case of continuous partial attention, CPA, we're motivated by a desire not to miss anything. Like the next text, the next email, the next update on NFL scores, whatever it is. Stone goes on to say, we feel most alive when we're connected, plugged in, and in the know. And what she says is, the result is, we're having this artificial sense of crisis all the time. So think about this. How often does it take for you to respond to the texts that are buzzing on your phone, even now? Like maybe an email pops up, or you have it on vibrate or whatever, and it's just like, I gotta look at it. You know, it's like it's so hard not to put this down. Why? Because we've trained our brain and our body, scientists are seeing, to always be ready. Because you don't know if it's going to be a text or an email, an important thing, an alert from CNN that's on one of your apps. And like, you got to know. It's not about multitasking. It's just about being in the know and not missing out on the latest. It's becoming an issue. Add to that fact that we're in a culture that often has been called life in the fast lane, right? Or welcome to the rat race. It reminds me of the great words of the great theologian Lily Tomlin. She says, the problem with the rat race is that no matter if you win or lose, you're still a rat. So think about that next time you're in the rat race. Isn't it ironic? Here's what's really ironic. In today's world, we have more time-saving devices than ever in the history of humankind. Think of how many apps you have to control and add value to your life and save time. And yet we have less leisure time than ever. In fact, they've done studies on this. We have less leisure time now in America than we did 50 years ago. How can that be? Because these things have filled our schedule full. We have more time-saving devices, but we just put more things in, right? We have more time. Okay, let's do more stuff. Let's find out more information. Let's go check our Facebook and post more things, right? And so here's what happens. We have more time-saving devices, and we realize we can get more done. We think we can anyway. And so what happens is we just speed our life up. We just pick it up. It's like, let's just do more. Pack more into our schedules. And what happens is we're getting ourselves in a constant state of hurry. In fact, there is a new affliction hitting us Americans, according to psychologists and sociologists. They label it hurry sickness. You can Google this. This is a new thing. They're realizing that we're finding ourselves with a new illness, if you will, hurry sickness. Now, here's some signs that you may be suffering from hurry sickness, all right? You don't have to raise your hand, but think about this. Here's some signs. Number one, you just have this constant state of hurriedness. So when you're driving, you're constantly looking for the fastest lane. You're darting in and out of traffic just to get a little bit ahead the person in front of you. You're constantly in a hurry to get through. And the light turns yellow, you speed up. You don't slow down. I mean, why? You don't have time to slow down for that light. Just go through. You know, if it turns red, well, that's okay. No, I mean, that's not good, right? And in fact, if you do stop at a red light, which I hope you do, you cut through a gas station just to avoid sitting there for an hour. A minute and a half, and you cut through the gas station, you pride yourself, I am so good. Like, look at those people behind me. Yeah, they're slow people. You know, until the cop pulls you over, and you're like, oh. Anyway, we cut through red lights in the elevator. This might be a sign that you have hurried sickness. You're in the elevator, and you're the only one, and you hit the closed door button. You know, and it's going to give you, like, what, 20 seconds more if it closes quicker? But we do these crazy things. At the grocery store, it's one of the worst. It's actually funny if you want to watch people. You scan the checkout lines. You look for the quickest one. And if there's someone in the 15 items or less line, and they have 16 items because you're counting them, you get unglued. Because that's at least another 10 seconds of your life, you know? Right? We're hurried sickness. It causes weird things to happen. You put something in the microwave for 30 seconds and you feel compelled to do something, to put a Facebook post up or check your Twitter. 30 seconds. All right. Now, here's the worst thing. When we start driving, we start multitasking. When we drive, we call it multitasking. We're actually just in a hurry and we're trying to pack more in. How many people put makeup on when you drive? Wow, you guys admitted that quickly. That was really awesome. We will pray for you right now and pray for all the drivers around you. How many people talk on the cell phone? Probably a lot, yes. How many of you text when you're driving? I hope no one raises your hand. If you do, we have driver 101. That is not a good idea. How many people shave when they drive? Save time in the morning. Seriously, come on. Finish reading the newspaper? Hopefully not. Play bumper cars, crochet while you drive. I mean, that could be kind of a fun thing. You make certain gestures to other people. That's multitasking. No, not really. Don't do that. Don't tell people they're number one. Hurried sickness. What happens is when we're driving even, we're always in a hurry. So we're trying to pack as much as and check our Facebook as we're in a stoplight. And it's causing us to go a little crazy. And here's the multiplied effect. All this stress, all this hurried sickness, all this distraction is making us very tired as a culture. Maybe you even feel tired this morning. Max Lucado, the author, says this: the energy gauge on the dashboard of our forehead says empty. Is that true for you today? Maybe you check the forehead of the person next to you, maybe just to check. No. It's a reality. Now, here's a commercial that came on several years ago, but I really liked it. I want to give this as an example. There's a commercial that Lexus did, I believe. It was a guy in a Lexus vehicle, and he was driving through what looked to be New York, and there's jackhammers going off, and there's horns blaring, and there's people yelling, and all this noise and chaos. And then they cut into the cabin of the Lexus, and it's quiet, and they're trying to advertise how quiet Lexus is. It's soundproof, et cetera, right? Buy the next Lexus, and you don't have to hear all this chaos and all this noise, right? Then it cuts back out to all the jackhammers and all the noise outside, and back into the cabin, and it's... You know, is that your life today? Do you have that calm in your life? Or is your life a little bit more like this car here where you've kind of got hit a couple of times, T-boned, your glasses broken, and life is just chaotic on the inside and the outside? So my question today I like to pose is, how do we prevent the frantic craziness of life from killing our soul? How can we keep the franticness of life from killing our soul? That's my question. And the way to look at that is we're going to look at this four-letter word called rest. Rest. As Troy said, we're in Psalm 23. And so we're going to look at Psalm 23 and see what it tells us about this four-letter word called rest. We're going to go line by line, as Troy said, and it's kind of fun. So what we're going to do is this. Talk about this very, very important psalm. You think about Psalm 23. It's actually one of the most famous psalms in all of the Bible. In fact, a lot of people that don't even go to church or read the Bible much, they've heard of Psalm 23. Why? Because it's shared in almost every funeral that you go to. You know, a lot of corporate boardrooms, maybe even have it on the wall sometimes. People have gotten all kinds of healing and comfort and has provided hope for millions of people over centuries. From prison walls to corporate boardrooms, this is one of those psalms that you probably have heard of before. To give you a little historical background, theologians believe that Psalm 23 was written by David, King David. In fact, if you've been in Capitol for a while, you know, we talked a lot about King David as we went through that series not too long ago. And the situation in David's life when he was writing this psalm that most theologians believe was at the time when David's own son Absalom had fled, David had fled Jerusalem, and Absalom was after him to take over the throne. So here's David. His life was in jeopardy. He was hunted. He was hounded for a number of months. He had fled Jerusalem, and Absalom, his own son, had rebelled against him. In fact, more information, if you'd like to read about it again, is 2 Samuel 15. 2 Samuel 15. The reason I point that out is this is not just some wonderful psalm that he was like in the back of the temple, and he was just like, you know, singing with angels, and he just came up with this wonderful psalm. No, this is in the messiness, muckiness, craziness of life. His own son was chasing him. And in the midst of that craziness, David writes this psalm. So there's some real context to this. And I think it may give you a fuller picture of why David says the things he does. All right, so enough of an intro. Psalm 23, it's up here on the screen. You can follow along on your phone, on the YouVersion if you want. And it's from the NIV version. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right path for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness, your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So as Troy said, we're going to go line by line, and we're going to focus in on that verse 2. He makes me lie down in green pastures. Now, to give you a little setup, it was so great last week, you know, Troy talked about living life as if you have a shepherd, right? And his big idea from last week, if you remember, was God will give you everything you need to do everything he wants you to do, which is a fabulous principle to apply to your life. God will give you everything you need to do everything he wants you to do. And it segues very well with today's message. It's funny, too, because we didn't even put our messages together, our heads together, like, hey, you just set me up for this next week. No, you didn't do it, but it's perfect. Because here's the thing. When we read, he makes me lie down in green pastures, and we talk about rest, if you don't trust God's going to give you everything you need, it's really hard to rest, isn't it? If you think life is up to you, man, you're going to be just hair on fire, going as hard as you possibly can to do everything you possibly can because you can't depend on anybody else but you. But if God is your shepherd and you believe that God will give you everything you need to do everything he calls you to do, well, you can rest. So here we go, verse 2. Now, here's the other interesting thing is, so David starts out, he says, the Lord is my shepherd. In your English version, you probably have capital L-O-R-D, right? It's all capitalized. The reason is, in Hebrew, that word is Yahweh. It's up here on the screen. The Hebrew is Yahweh. Some of you guys are very familiar with that term. That is the most holy name for God. It's the personal name for God. When Moses asks, what is your name, God, that I go tell the Israelites who this God is that's going to call his people out of Egypt, that's the name that God gives them, Yahweh. Right? So it's the most personal name. That's why it's capitalized in your English version to try to show it's different than just Lord, as if, you know, there's another term for Lord that's different, that's, you know, lowercase O-R-D. But this is Yahweh. So here's David saying that Yahweh is my shepherd. A pastor once said, you know, David didn't write the Lord is a shepherd. This would just be a generic statement. He is one among many. He doesn't say the Lord is the shepherd. That'd be kind of just a statement of fact. You know, that's who God is. He doesn't say God, the Lord is our shepherd. That would suggest a large group, a crowd. You may feel lost in a crowd. You may not feel that personal attention in a crowd. No, David says, the Lord, Yahweh, is my shepherd. Very personal. So think about this for a second. The same God who created all the mountains, created the oceans, created everything you see, including you, could be your shepherd. That's what David is saying. The Lord Yahweh is your shepherd, or could be your shepherd, if you allow him to be. That's a radical statement. I mean, right there, you can go home and just think about that, and that can change your life. That the God of the universe can be your shepherd. That's what David starts out with this psalm. That's why I think it's so loved. That's a powerful statement in and of itself. So he says, God is my shepherd. And then he goes into his first topic, right? And his first topic is rest. I don't know about you, but that's kind of disappointing, right? Wouldn't it be like, okay, I'm going to go into battle next. Like, okay, because God's my shepherd, I'm going to take on that next army, or I'm going to climb that mountain. I'm going to do all these great things for God. He says nothing about what he's going to do for God. He goes into rest. Isn't that odd? That seems kind of boring. Like, God's my shepherd. Okay, so I'm going to take a nap. That does not sound very exciting or inspiring. Why rest? Why this emphasis on rest? There must be something here. So again, this phrase, God makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. Why this emphasis on rest? Let me give you a little background on sheep. This will give you some appreciation. Maybe why David does it this way. All right, so it's number one. Sheep do not drink running water. What do I mean by that? So if you go to the mountains, you see these wonderful streams coming down from the mountains, and they're like, oh, this is great. If I had a sheep, he could drink right now. I mean, maybe you don't think that, but now you do. Wow, that'd be such a great river to drink from. No, sheep do not drink from running water. They're kind of Oompa Loompa type, you know, animals, right? And what happens is, truly, though, if they had running water, they may tip over and get their wool wet, and they could drown. So a good shepherd knows that. He's got to take care of these Oompa Loompas, and he makes sure there's still water. There's quiet water. So it takes work. The shepherd has to really think, I've got to make sure I get my sheep to places where they can actually drink and not drown. So right there, the shepherd's taking care of them. He's thinking about them. Not only that, but sheep are really difficult to put to sleep. Has anyone put a sheep to sleep? That would be really cool to put in your resume, though. It would be awesome. Like, I can put sheep to sleep. That's pretty awesome. Wouldn't get you a job, but it's interesting to put on there anyway, a hobby. So how do you put sheep to sleep? Well, if you've ever put a two-year-old after Halloween to sleep, it's kind of the same. No, just kidding. Too close to home. Max Lucado said this in Traveling Light, sheep have a hard time sleeping. Everything must be perfect for a sheep to sleep. There can't be any predators. There can't be any tension in the flock. There can't be any bugs in the air. They can't sleep on an empty stomach. Some of you are saying, you just described my spouse. So anyway, this is applicable to all kinds of things. Sheep don't know how to slow down. They don't know how to rest well. That's why they need a shepherd. That's why the words are, he makes me lie down. There's a sense of forcefulness. There's a guiding. The shepherd has to really help the sheep to actually rest. Because sheep have a hard time sleeping. They have a hard time resting. They must be led to green pastures. Here's another thing that's interesting. On top of that, green pastures, they're not the natural terrain of Judea. You know, where David would take care of his sheep around Bethlehem, where he kept his flock, it wasn't necessarily lush and green. Certainly not all around the year. In fact, even today, the area around Bethlehem is white and parched. So lush and green pastures, a shepherd, again, would have to really work at finding those spots of green pasture. It would take a lot of work. He'd have to be really intentional about this. And that's what the good shepherd does, is find still water. He finds green pastures. So here's this image. Sheep need sleep. They need green pastures. And the shepherd finds it for him. So here's what David is telling us. The good shepherd, God the good shepherd, has prepared the way for me. He's cleared the path. He's irrigated the soil. He's eliminated the rocks. And the end result is rest. In fact, the very next verse says that God restores my soul. And Tara's going to talk about that next week. It's going to be great. But here's what, for today, rest is directly connected to restoration. It's interesting. It's kind of a play on words even, isn't it? Rest leads to restoration. If you don't rest, it's really hard to be restored. So God is leading us to green pastures. God is providing quiet waters. Why? Because he knows we need to rest. That's why God spends so much time, and it's the first subject after the Lord is my shepherd, because rest is a big deal to God. That was a pretty awesome answer there. That's a good cell phone message. Talk about distraction, right? Okay. Now, here's another affliction, different from hurried sickness. Another affliction that impacts us. Up on the screen, let me give you some stats. Let me know if you know what this affliction is. It afflicts 70 million Americans. It's the cause of 38,000 deaths each year. It costs the U.S. $70 billion worth of productivity. Teenagers have it, middle-agers deal with it, and senior citizens likewise are afflicted by this. What is this malady? Insomnia, yeah, pretty good. Yeah, insomnia, good job. Some people said stress, and no, it's insomnia, you're exactly right. Now, here's what's really interesting. I don't know if you've ever realized this, but some of the worst accidents we hear about and see on CNN are caused by lack of rest. To give you an example, Three Mile Island, that happened several years ago, of course, that was caused by sleep deprivation, as they did a study on that tragedy. The Challenger explosion, for many of us, that was part of our generation, is a horrible tragedy. Well, a lot of that, they say, was caused, sadly, by sleep deprivation. Not exclusively, but that was one of the causes. Chernobyl in Russia, the nuclear meltdown was caused by sleep deprivation. People had not had enough rest, and so they made mistakes, and they did terrible, you know, you see the results. The Exxon Valdez oil spill, caused by insomnia, lack of sleep. So here's the thing. I mean, you think about it, this is a big deal. It's a bigger deal than I even ever thought of. Insomnia affects us in major ways. If it goes unchecked in our life, it can literally shorten our life and impact those around us pretty severely. If that's not enough to convince you, U.S. News and World Report recently reported that Americans have a national sleep deficit that's bigger than the national financial deficit. And that's getting bigger by the day. That's a big deficit, right? They also found this. This is astounding to me. 24,000 people in the U.S. every year, 24,000 people every year in the U.S. die from insomnia-related accidents. Sleep deprivation accidents. So insomnia, again, if it goes unchecked, it can literally shorten our life and severely impact those around us. Many of us try to live like Thomas Edison, who survived on 15-minute naps throughout the day. But most of us should learn from Albert Einstein, who averaged 11 hours a night. Albert Einstein was a genius, right? For many reasons. But we maybe need to learn from the genius here. 11 hours. And get this. If you think, well, no, I can't be productive if I sleep 11 hours. I think Albert Einstein was really productive. I don't know, but maybe. 11 hours a night, no kidding. So we need maybe learn from people like him. In fact, we could even learn from the animal world. Dogs doze. My dog all the time sleeps. Bears hibernate and cats take cat naps even. Why do we as humans have such a struggle with rest? But we do. We struggle with rest. Here's my point. It would be unrealistic for me to just to come to you and look at your life and say, you know, just quit doing what you're doing and get more rest. You're like, Rob, you don't understand. My life is so full. I have people that count on me at my job. I have kids. That alone right there explains why you have a lack of rest, right? I mean, there are a lot of things in your life that just can't go away overnight. And I realize that. It'd be unrealistic for me to say that. But what I can say is this. While we cannot control the speed of life around us, we can always control the speed of life inside of us. We can't control everything outside of us. But when it comes to the interior of our life, we do have control over that one. With God's help, we can control the speed of life inside of us. In fact, here's what I think. I think underneath this need for physical rest is an even deeper need. That's spiritual rest. In fact, I think because we're not resting spiritually, it's causing us to not rest physically. And we already talked about how physical rest is a big problem. But underlying that is an even maybe bigger problem. Here's what John Ortberg, one of my favorite authors and speakers and pastors, he says, hurry is not a disordered schedule. Hurry is a disordered heart. Hurry is not a disordered schedule. Hurry is a disordered heart. So this is not about time management per se. It's about heart management. How is your heart tonight? How is your soul today, I should say? How's your soul? How's your heart? Isn't it ironic? Have you ever thought about this? The Ten Commandments, they're in the Bible. God only uses one sentence to talk about adultery, one sentence to talk about murder, one sentence to talk about stealing. He takes an entire paragraph to talk about the Sabbath day rest. One paragraph on rest, one sentence for all the others. That's interesting, isn't it? In fact, author Dorothy Bass says this regarding the Sabbath day rest. This is the only one of the Ten Commandments we brag about breaking, yet it's one of the most important of them all. I think she's right. It's a big deal that we overlook at our own peril. So, why is rest so difficult for us to grasp onto and do? I'm just going to suggest two. I think there's multiple ones, but here's just two ideas, at least I think, that are underneath this physical rest, this need for physical rest, this spiritual rest that's maybe underneath all these issues. Number one, I think we try to please way too many people. In fact, how many people are people pleasers like me? Go ahead and raise your hand. All right, keep your hand up all the rest of the service. Just kidding. Just testing you. We have a small group for people pleasers later. You can all lead that because I totally am a people pleaser. So if this is something you struggle with, I think we all do at some level, but certainly I know some of us really struggle with this. You can actually practice saying no. In fact, maybe today you're going to go watch some NFL football, you're going to go watch the World Series, you're going to watch whatever on TV perhaps. And there's a lot of commercials that go on, right, during these games and during these shows. You can practice saying no to your TV. Okay, here's a couple examples, right? The next time that advertisement for the Cadillac Escalade comes up and says, if you want to stand out to your peers, buy a Cadillac Escalade. Just say no to the TV. N-O, no. So first of all, it's too expensive, but no, just say no to it, right? Or that beer commercial, you know, if you want to be attractive and popular, drink Coors beer. Just say no. No, I don't have to do that, you know? Or when it says, you want to be the envy of your friends, buy disco's greatest hits. Please say no. I think disco music's simple. I think it's in the Bible somewhere. Just kidding, disco fans, kind of. in all seriousness, I think we need to say no more. I think we need to learn to say no. How's no working for you? Jesus said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. I think we please too many people, and that drives our busyness because we're constantly trying to say yes to everybody, and our life just gets really chaotic, and we don't have that calm inside of our life because we're pleasing everybody else. So that's one reason. I think a second reason is this. We receive our self-worth from the wrong source. This one's a big one. We receive our self-worth from the wrong source. The more work we do, we think we get more worth. The more busy we are, the more important we are. Right? You know, by the way, this is true for pastors. The whole work and worth thing. I can't remember if I've shared this with you before, but I remember going to this conference. I went for several years. I was a seminar presenter, and I had transitioned in between when I was going to these seminars from a church that was over 3,000 to a church that was under 300. And I remember, so when pastors get together, you greet each other, and the first question after they ask your name, where you're from, is, how big is your church? It's pastor speak for. How awesome are you? Like, how much worth do you have as a pastor? How much has God blessed you? You know, I mean, that's the spiritual undertones. And I am embarrassed to admit this, but it's true. So, you know, when I was there and I was part of a church of 3,000 more and growing, or mega churches, yeah, we're doing pretty good. You know, we're pretty cool. We got a lot of worth. You know, that's what you're thinking when you say, yeah, I'm part of a church of 3,000 and it's pretty awesome. You know, it really is embarrassing to admit that, but we do as pastors even struggle with that, because when work equals worth, we think we're more worthy because we have a bigger church. And it was funny because in the next year, I'm at the same conference with some of the same people. And they're like, well, so how big is your church, Rob? And it's like, well, it's under 300. There's like 500 that thought about going, but only 300 showed up. But and I'm like, this is stupid and it's silly. And I know it's ridiculous, but we struggle with it. And so maybe you too struggle with, you know, my GPA is not quite high enough. Or, you know, I just don't have enough income. I don't get the salary bonuses. I don't drive the right car. I don't live in the right neighborhood. And if we're not careful, we are equating worth with work or busyness with importance. The more busy we are, the more important we are. So therefore, we have to have all these other things going on. And it causes us to be really busy. And we're constantly on this treadmill of performance, trying to prove our worth, rather than saying, God, I know I'm good in your eyes. I mean, I'm worthy in your eyes. God, you love me the way I am. You've forgiven me for my sins. You've accepted me, and that's enough for me. That's where we need to be. Base our worth on what God sees us as, not on our income levels or our neighborhood or how big our church is, but how God views us. That would help a lot of that spiritual unrest, which then leads to physical unrest. We find our self-worth from the wrong source. Kierkegaard says, the press of busyness is like a charm. And that was written well before cell phones, but it's true, right? Think about this. When you get together with somebody for lunch, and if their phone is on the table as you're eating lunch, and it's just buzzing like every 2 seconds, you're like, wow, that person is so important. I want to be like that person, you know? So you put on yours, just you got an app that just buzzes you every 2 seconds, just to look really important. Like, yeah, I'm too busy, you know? A lot of people try to get a hold of me, you know? Don't do that. It's just masking what's really underneath. Just say, wait a second. That is silly. Where do you find your worth? Is it on what God thinks of you and how God views you, or all these other external things? See, we can't always control the speed of life or what people think of us on the outside, but we can always control what goes on inside. Always. So we asked about the energy gauge, but can I be so bold to ask, if you had a display and a gauge for your soul's health today, what would your soul's dashboard gauge say? How healthy is that? Is it on empty? Is it on full? Here's what I like to do is I want to show a brief video clip, and I really want you to rest. Whatever's going on, if you got a phone, turn your phone down, turn it off, put it down, watch this video, and let the words speak to you today about rest. Take a look. Peace is hard to come by, isn't it? You know, Jesus, the great shepherd, said these words in Matthew 11, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. How many of you are just worn out? Really need rest, like soul rest, and physical rest too, for that matter. You know one of the last things that Jesus said before he ascended into heaven? Do you remember that? In Acts, he talks about, I give you my peace. Is peace a characteristic that describes your life? And again, I'd say, not on the outside perhaps, but on the inside of your life, is peace one of those overarching characteristics? If not, Jesus the Great Shepherd says, come to me and you will find rest. I believe it's why thousands of years ago, David wrote these words, God makes me lie down in green pastures. God, our great shepherd, needs to help us with this one. And to give us that deep rest, no matter how much stress and anxiety and worry and fear that are going on around us, that again, we may not have any control over. How we react to it on the inside, with God's help, we have all the control in the world. But we cannot always control the speed of life around us. We can always control the speed of life inside of us. Because hurry sickness isn't necessarily about a disordered schedule. It could be about a disordered heart. So as I close today, I want to just challenge you with three super simple, very practical ways to create more rest in your life, all right? Here's three quick things. How can we experience more of this green pastures experience that David talks about? Number one, slow down. What I mean by that is, next time you have lunch, maybe right after this service, have a meal and actually chew your food. Tell your kids to do it. You need to do it. Put your fork down. And instead of just rushing through the lunch and checking your scores and checking your Facebook, turn your phone off and look at the person you're eating with. Slow down. Enjoy the moment. Okay, this is going to be crazy. When you drive away from here, find the slowest lane on the highway and drive under the speed limit. I know. It's crazy. You go to the grocery store. Intentionally go in the slowest line. That's going to be hard. But try it. Slow down. Why are we in such a rush? What are we trying to do? Where are we trying to go? So slow down. You find the application that works for you, but slow down. Number two, start saying no to good things so you can say yes to the best things. I think a lot of us need to start making a to-not-do list. Not a to-do list, a to-not-do, right? We need to start saying no. And I know you're thinking, if I say no, Rob, I'm going to disappoint a lot of people. Yep. You are. If it's any comfort, Jesus disappointed people. I know that sounds sacrilegious, but he did. Think about it. We went to a crowd. He didn't heal every single person. He didn't stop for every single person. I always think about that moment where he came to this woman who was bleeding. This crowd was pressing on him, and he went to one woman. He didn't give attention to the entire crowd, just to this one woman. He disappointed probably a lot of people. He only picked 12 disciples. There's probably at least 20 more that wanted to be his disciple, maybe, right? He only picked 12. Jesus disappointed people, or they perceived that he disappointed them. And they may feel disappointed by you. But here's the thing. If God is telling you to do something, you probably may have to say no to certain people so you can say yes to God. You have to say no to good things in order to say yes to the best things. So start making that not-to-do list. That could be one of the greatest things you do this week. The third thing, and the most important, is spend time with God. I know that sounds super simple, and it's something you'd probably expect to hear from a church and from a pastor, and you've heard it many times from this pulpit. Spend time with God. So here's my question. Here's my challenge. Look at your calendar right now on your phone, and is God on your calendar? If not, you could say, Siri, put meeting with God every day for 2 hours. And Siri will do it. She may say, God who? You know, you never know, but put it on your calendar. It's one thing to say, I know I really should spend time with God, but how many of us do it? In fact, here's another challenge. I want you this week, okay, this is a lot of homework, I know, but just in your mind, analyze how much time you spend in a given week updating your Facebook status, checking out Twitter, going on social media, taking selfies. I know it's hard compared to spending time with God. Just start there. I tell you what, I'm going to go on a limb here, but spending time with God is going to fill you up so much more than that next selfie. Sorry to break it to you, but there's so much more for us. God is ready as a good shepherd to provide green pastures for you and lead you beside quiet waters. And I think we're just so busy. It's not that we don't want it. We're just busy. Like, hey, when I have time, I'd love to go to those green pastures. I got to do another Facebook post, and I've got to do more work or whatever it is. So spend time with God. Sabbath day rest. Create your own Sabbath day. Doesn't necessarily have to be a Sunday. You know, I always thought it was funny as a pastor, a Sabbath day was Sunday. And I'm like, but that's my work day. When do I rest? Monday, Tuesday, you know. Come up with your own Sabbath day. I don't think God is so concerned what day of the week. It's just have a Sabbath day where you're dedicated to God and you're not pursuing your work, you're doing the work of God. Spend time with God. See, at the end of the day, none of us want our epitaph, "He was really busy," or "She was really busy." No, we want the sense that we were fully engaged in our relationships, right? We were fully engaged in our marriage. We had those moments with our kids where we were fully engaged with them, and they knew it. They could see it in our eyes. And I don't think we want to hydroplane over our spirituality. We want to have a deep, abiding, rich relationship with God. I think we all want that, and we all want peace. You know, that really deep peace that the world cannot provide, that only God can provide. Well, we can't do that unless we have rest. So while we cannot control the speed of life around us, we can control always the speed of life inside of us. May we be people that make the health of our soul our number one priority. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for today. And I thank you for an opportunity to talk about rest. Frankly, God, I know I'm one of the worst up here. I struggle with incorporating rest into my life. And I have a feeling a lot of us here in this room do as well. God, would you help us see the importance and the value of rest? And may we intentionally incorporate it into our schedules. God, I know you have green pastures for everyone in this room. We just need to take you up on the offer. You have rest for us that will restore our soul, but we need to take you up on the offer. Help us to take care of the speed of the life inside of us. And I have a feeling, God, it'll impact the speed of life around us as well. May we be people that pursue you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Hey, before we wrap, I just want to give you a couple of homework items. Number one, we're going to have this graphic up for you. We put this on social media. You can put it on your Twitter, speaking of Twitter and Facebook. Here's a post you can put up there. Big idea, and that'll be a reminder that I got to spend some time resting. Here's three other books. Max Lucado's book, I referenced it a couple of times, Traveling Light, a great book about Psalm 23. Highly recommend this one. Very good. Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23 by Philip Keller. It's been around for several years. It gives you kind of an insight of what it literally means to take care of sheep from a shepherd's perspective, like a real shepherd, real sheep. It's a fascinating book, and of course, you have the spiritual principles with it too. So a shepherd's look at Psalm 23. And then the last one, The Rest of God by Mark Buchanan. This is one that Troy recommended to me. I read it. Fantastic. If you want to learn about Sabbath day rest, what is that all about? Is that even applicable to today? This is a good book, The Rest of God by Mark Buchanan. Take a look at it. There's some great resources. Thanks for listening. Let's stand, and Troy's going to close us.
Thank you, Rob. Friends, if you'd like to receive prayer from someone before you go, make your way up here to the front, because we would love to pray for you before you head out of this building. My prayer for all of you is this: no matter the pace of your present circumstances, may you find the faith to live like you have a shepherd, so the pace of your soul can be peace. Thanks for coming today. Grace and peace.